Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and around the world in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on another popular lie right after this. You know, back in 1787, the writers of our Constitution put in this clause at Article 1, Section 10. It says, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt." Now, that clause follows the biblical injunction on just weights and balances that we see in Leviticus 19. Verses 35 and 36. Private business is carried on in gold and silver coin. Public business is conducted in commercial paper. Commercial paper are things like stocks, bonds, Federal Reserve notes, credit cards, debt, and usury. Now, in 1965, our Congress said that there's no difference in the value of gold and silver coin versus clad coin or currency. And you know, that's very true when we're dealing with banks, government, and commercial industries. But out here in the real marketplace, there's a 7-to-1 difference in the purchasing power of that gold over paper. And there's a 7-to-1 difference in the taxes that are due on that fiat paper versus gold. Now, God and our founding fathers didn't give us gold and silver coin for no good purpose. They knew that as a matter of law, gold and silver coin was absolutely necessary for us to deal in order for us to establish our property rights. Well, our Congress and our politicians did not take our gold and silver coin away from us for no good reason either. They knew, and they knew full well when they did it back in 1933, that if they were going to subjugate a free people, they would first have to take away the people's gold and silver coin, in order to take away the people's right to property, and then destroy their right to property, or their property rights. Now, if you and I intend to regain our rights, duties, and capacities, we're going to have to regain our property and property rights first. And that's because property is the legal foundation for all of our liberties. So let me teach you how to do just that. It's in our business school, which is now on compact disc for adult home school. Now, for more information about our private business school, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package first. That's the place to start. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general, and it's informative, it's entertaining, it's educational. Best of all, it's free, and you can call and order one right now. Just call and ask for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, our business school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Hey, we've been talking about popular lies, and I can't think of a more popular lie than insurance. My God, Americans believe in insurance like it was mom and apple pie. You know that? I had a guy here in class years back, and his wife had been killed in an auto accident, and it was by an uninsured motorist. And when I brought up limited liability versus strict liability, which is part and parcel of our business school, and I pointed out that insurance was a scam, it was a lie, it was a cheat, and it was ripping us off, and, oh my God, I thought he was going to have kittens. And he preached a sermon to the whole class about uninsured motorists and how wicked and awful and evil they are and blah, blah, blah. And I got to thinking about that, and I said, well, is it because he didn't get paid? I mean, it was bad enough his wife got killed, but it's even worse when you don't get paid for it, isn't it? So anyway, I've always remembered old Harry. The guy's name was Harry. Thought about that from time to time. And it certainly is a traumatic experience. Somebody gets killed, gets hurt, and you suffer a damage, and you know a tornado comes through, rips your house apart, and you say, well, my God, I'm glad I've got tornado insurance. Or, boy, I'm really glad I got hurricane insurance. Now, down on the Gulf Coast, you know, you got millions of people down there damaged. Those people, a lot of them, had hurricane insurance, and the insurance companies down there wouldn't pay them. They wouldn't pay them because the damage was caused by water as opposed to wind. See, a hurricane policy has a clause. You know, take a look about paragraph 18. They got a clause in there. We don't pay for water damage. Hell, it's the tidal surge that causes all the damage here, kids, not the wind. But if your house blows down before the tidal surge wrecks your house, they'll pay you for the value of the house. Well, they'll pay you for some of it. And then they don't pay you for all of it. And then they make you sue them. You have to go to litigation in order to get your money out of them. So insurance is a scam. It's a fraud. And it's specifically prohibited in the Bible, in case you wanted to know. A lot of times people say to me, why, where in the Bible does it say I shouldn't buy insurance, huh? Can you just point to insurance in the Bible? Well, I get excited. People's adrenaline flows, and it flows faster than their mouths can flap. Yeah, I can show you. If I couldn't show you, I wouldn't have said it. You'll find it in Exodus 21. It's called negligence statute. And it starts in verse 21. It's Exodus 21, 28 through 36. If an ox gores a man or a woman that they die, then the ox shall be surely stoned, and his flesh shall not be eaten, but the owner of the ox shall be quit. And what that means is that if someone is injured or killed, a determination of the fault must be determined and then the cause eliminated. No one shall profit from the event, and if it is determined to be an act of God, then the injured party or parties have no recourse against anyone's property. Now the statute goes on to say, but if the ox were wont to push with his horn in time past, and it's been testified to his owner, and he has not kept him in, but that he has killed a man or a woman, then the ox shall be stoned and his owner shall be put to death. Ah, what that means is, but if it's known that a hazard exists, or it should be known that there is a hazard, and it's been told to the owner of property, and the owner of the property fails or refuses to take reasonable action to prevent the known hazard from causing a damage, and someone is then injured or killed as a result, then the property is forfeited, and the owner is put to death or punished accordingly. It's called the principle of punishment, is an eye for an eye, life for life. And that's the way property damage claims are to be handled. Well, scripturally. Third, if there be laid on him a sum of money, then he shall give for the ransom of his life whatsoever is laid upon him. What that means is, in property negligence cases, an injury is paid for by the negligent property owner, and he must pay all of the actual damages. But he pays no punitive or other damages. In the case of death, he must pay whatever the parents of the dead child's husband or wife demand or forfeit his own life. This triggers the year of release and or the jubilee year statutes in the administration of justice. So whether he's gored a son or a daughter, according to this judgment shall it be done to him. And if the ox shall push a manservant or a maidservant, he shall give unto him his master 30 shekels of silver, and the ox shall be stoned. Well, what that means is that when an employee perceives that there is a threat to him or the potential of injury or death, though no actual injury has been sustained, then the person claiming that there is a danger must pay the property owner an amount of about 25% of the value of the property, and the owner must remove the hazard. If he doesn't remove the hazard, if he doesn't want to accept the 25%, he must remove the hazard then at his own expense or pay full damages when it occurs. Takes your choice there. And fifth, if a man shall open a pit, or if a man shall dig a pit and not cover it, and an ox or an ass shall fall therein, and the owner of the pit shall make it good and give money unto the owner of them, and the dead beast shall be his. What that means is, if an enterprise causes a damage caused by the negligence of a property owner, the property owner shall pay all of the cost of restitution, known as strict liability. The damaged property shall become the property of the tortfeasor upon payment for the damages. And then sixth, the scripture says, and if one man's ox hurts another, that he die, then they shall sell the live ox and divide the money of it, and the dead ox also they shall divide. Now what that means is that in the event of a property loss caused by contributory negligence, then we resolve the issue of loss 50-50. It's called the doctrine of contributory negligence. And then finally, or if it be known that the ox has used his horn to push in time past and his owner has not kept him in, he shall surely pay ox for ox and the dead ox shall be his own. The answer to that is, or what that means is that in cases of property damage, where fault is estimated and the tortfeasor shall pay all of the damages. Now this is called limited liability versus strict liability, and this is the statute in Exodus 21 verses 28 through 36. So insurance then, of and by itself, is known as limited liability. What that means is that we don't want to be responsible for our actions. That's the bottom line. Now here in Missouri, they've got a auto liability law here. It's called the Financial Responsibility Act of 1976. And when we label these acts, you know, we label them positively. Financial Responsibility Act of 1976. Hey, wait a minute. Let's think about this for a minute. You go out and you buy an insurance policy on your automobile. So that, you know, say it's $100,000, and so you go out here and you have an accident, and the damages are $50,000. So you've paid your $500 or $800 a year premium, and you have limited your losses to the premium. The insurance company has to pay the $50,000 damage. That's what limited liability is. The purpose for this whole program is to limit your liability, not eliminate the liability, but to limit the liability. We're going to have some liability. That's the premium, but we're not going to have to pay the $50,000. This is called equitable loss spreading. Equitable loss spreading. It's about as popular as adultery. It is on everybody's mind. Everybody wants it. I can't think of anybody that doesn't have insurance, want insurance, buys insurance, uses insurance, talks about insurance, and wants more of it. Boy, you can find it a rip. In fact, here in America, our president is telling us he's going to give us national health care insurance. It's about as popular as Flo's whorehouse. The people of America just can't wait until they can get lined up and signed up for national health care insurance so they can have free health care. Boy, that's going to be a good one. And all the countries where they've got free health care, they don't have much health care. But, and it ain't exactly free either, because you got to pay your taxes. And so in France, they pay about 60% taxes. I had some Canadians down here the other day. I was talking to them Canadians. Oh, my God, talk about tax. We Americans down here cry our eyeballs out at 42 cents a gallon tax. Hell, they pay $1 a gallon tax for fuel tax up in Canada. And then over in Europe, my God, they're paying $6 a gallon for fuel. So $6 to $9 a gallon, you know, for gasoline. And we're paying about $2.50 a gallon here as I speak. I don't think Americans know how well we have it over here, you know, compared to everybody else in the world. And that's in the advanced first world nations, you know, like France and Germany and England, Canada, Australia. So I just thought I'd throw that out there for a little consideration. But now when we're talking about insurance, insurance is popular and people love it. So I thought, well, let's take a look and see how much this insurance is costing us. Take a look at auto insurance, for instance. That's a big one. If you take a look here in the United States, back about 1995, these are the numbers for 1994, insurance statistics for cars. I haven't updated them, but, you know, if you updated them, the percentages will be about the same. When I was a claims adjuster back in the 60s, there are some numbers that have changed, but very moderately. You got more people, more cars, and higher premiums, and more inflation, but when you get down to the bottom line, it's all about the same proportionately. So these numbers work like this. The total number of licensed drivers was 175 million, and the total number of vehicles registered was 192 million. So there's a few more cars than there are drivers, but on average, if you just average it out here, you'd have about one car for every licensed driver in America. Now, the total crashes in a given year is about 17 million wrecks a year out of 192 million cars. Total vehicles involved in those crashes was 27 million. That's because a lot of them are just one car crashes. The total number of vehicles that had injuries, though, in these crashes was only about 4 million. So you got 27 million crashes, about 4 million people are injured. Total property damage done was about, to vehicles only, was about $24 million. But the total damages of all descriptions was $150 billion. Some of those cars ran into things that caused a lot more damage. So you got about $150 billion worth of damages. Every seventh car in America is involved in an accident every year. Every seventh car. Now, sometimes those accidents are fender benders in the Battlefield Mall parking lot. And then some of them are head-on crashes that kill people. So the insurance industry, they break these down so that they can get numbers out of them, give them statistics, so that they know how much to charge in premiums so that they can make their 90 cent on a dollar profit. That's right, 90 cents on the dollar. Back in the old days when I was in the game, this is back in the mid-60s, the auto insurance industry was crying the blues. And they had to pay out all these damages, all these claims on these auto insurance policies. And they just cried and cried and cried. But here's the actual numbers. 1965, for every dollar's worth of premiums that the insurance, this is the auto insurance industry, has taken in, they paid out 5 cents. Paid out a nickel for every dollar they took in and cried their eyeballs out. Over the years, they cried and cried some more, and they said, oh my God, our claims have doubled. And then they cried some more, and they said, oh my God, our claims have more than doubled. And they ain't lying to you. They're telling you the truth. Today, the auto insurance industry pays out 11 cents for every dollar they take in. They're second only to banks. You know, the only more profitable operation is banks. Well, of course, farming is much more profitable than banks and insurance combined, but the farmers are out here paying usury and interest and won't practice the agricultural laws. The profit margin on farming is 87,200%. Insurance is good, you know, but, you know, it's only about 1,200%, and banking is good, you know, it's about 1,500%, but farming is 87,200% profit, guaranteed by God himself. He did that in Deuteronomy chapter 28, verses 1 through 14, so I'll pass that one on to you. Only a farmer could screw up a profit margin like that. Only a farmer could screw that up. Now, did you know that 41% of all of the cars in America are insured? No, in most states they have this compulsory insurance law. Well, in those states that have the compulsory insurance laws, 41% are insured and 59% of the cars are uninsured. Just thought I'd let you know what the statistics tell you. And get this, 90% of all the cars in the inner cities are uninsured. So if you see a car driving down the street in downtown Los Angeles, Detroit, or Chicago, it's uninsured. 9 out of 10. Just count them. As you're standing there on the corner watching the cars go by, count up 10 cars, 9 of them are uninsured. That's in the inner cities. Government pays about 0.9% of the cost of auto accidents. About 1 in 4 auto accidents has a minor injury. 25% of auto accidents have one minor injury. Somebody skinned his finger or ripped off a fingernail. About 1 in 267 auto accidents has a moderate injury. Somebody's got a black eye or a bump on their head. 1 out of every 267. Now, about 1 in 100 auto accidents has a serious injury. A serious injury, and go to the hospital. 1 in 100. About 1 in 985 auto accidents has a severe injury. And he was in the hospital for several days. Severe injury, about 1 in 985. Remember, 1 in 1,000 if you round it off. About 1 in 2,500 auto accidents has a critical injury. Oh, my God, they went to the ICU. They've been in there on life support. 1 in 2,440. It's about 1 out of every 2,500 has a critical injury. And about 1 out of every 415 auto accidents has a fatal injury. So out of every 400 auto wrecks, there's somebody killed. Somebody gets killed. There's your number. Numbers. Now, the average auto insurance premium is $800 a year. $800 a year is what you're paying. What's the chances of you having a claim against your auto insurance carrier if you're an insured driver over a period of years? And how often should you expect to have an auto accident? I want you to mull that over a little bit. 1 in 7 cars in the nation is going to be involved in an accident this year. Let's suppose that you're an insured driver, just the average Joe Sixpack insured driver, and you're going to drive your car for the next 32 years. Over the course of 32 years, how many auto accidents should you expect to be involved in? How many insurance claims do you think you're going to have over the next 32 years? I won't tell you right away, but you jot that down. And a little later on here, I'm going to give you the answer to that. I think you're going to be amazed. All right, now, victims with losses between $25,000 and $100,000 recover 56% of their damages. And boy, that ain't too good. Let me give you that one again. If you have an auto accident and you have $25,000 in damages, or $50,000 in damages, or $75,000 in damages, or $100,000 in damages, on average, you'll get 56% of your damages paid to you. It's kind of like you guys down there on the Gulf Coast. You know, you have a hurricane, you got your house 100% covered, and the insurance company comes over and they pay you 40, 50, 60% of the damages. What do you think of that? Now, in Los Angeles County, liability insurance costs $3,500 a year. This is 1994, $3,500 a year. 90% of the people don't have auto insurance. And that's because it costs $3,500 a year. Auto premiums collected were $107 billion in 1996. So the industry collected over $100 billion worth of premiums. Insurance claims paid out was about $12 billion, $11.6 billion, or about 11%. Isn't that special? For every dollar they take in, they pay out 11 cents. Isn't that just keen, peachy keen? Just thought I'd throw that one out there for you, in case you were crying for the auto insurance industry. Camden, New Jersey, man and wife, 17-year-old daughter pay $2,000 a year. Pasadena, California, man with a wife and a 17-year-old son pays $4,700 a year. Insurance companies paid claims on 6 million wrecks, 1994. 27 million drivers are involved in 17 million wrecks every year. An insured driver can expect one accident every 33 years. Every driver can expect an accident every 10 years. 48% of all accidents are unreported to the police. Boy, that's a number. 48%. Now, just picture this. Only one half of accidents are reported. And 21% of injury accidents are unreported to the police. 1 in 5 injury accidents isn't reported. All right, got those numbers, Tim? All right, now here's the answer to your riddle. You can expect to have an accident once every 33 years if you're an insured driver. Now, you're paying $800 a year in auto insurance premiums. So if you're paying $800 a year times 33 years, you're going to pay $26,400 in premiums. Now, here's your final test question here, boys and girls. Get this one down now. If you're going to have an accident once every 33 years as an insured driver, what is the average cost of the accident that you're going to have once every 33 years? Give me a drum roll on this one here, children. You ready for this? It's $1,835. $1,835. Now, here's what that means to you. And that means that the auto insurance industry is going to take $26,400 in premiums from you, and you're going to have one accident once every 33 years. That's $1,835. Which means that the auto insurance industry makes a $24,565 profit. Now, let me figure out what the profit percentage is on this transaction. Let's take 1835 and divide that by the 26,400, shall we? Oh, my God. It's 93%. Profit margin's 93%. Now that's uninsured drivers. Well, that's not too shabby, is it? 93%. And you're out here buying this. Now I don't buy auto insurance. What I like to do is to put my money in my can. I've got a bond is what I've got over here. I've got a bond, property bond. And so your state will have a property bond law also. And then you could put up your house or a piece of property or something in lieu of the premium. Instead of paying $800 a year premium, you put up your house or your equity in your house, and then you put the $800 in your coffee can. See, I got it. I got some coffee cans. I got a health insurance can and an auto insurance can and a fire insurance can, and I put these coffee cans over here, and then I take the amount of money that I should be paying if I was average, like $800 a year for my auto insurance, and I put it in my can every year. Well, after 10 years, I have $8,000 in my can. See how that works? Then when I have my $1,835 wreck, which is the average, then I can pay off my $1,835 and take the old lady on a princess cruise with the $6,000 remainder. What do you think of that? And my wife thinks that's a hell of a keen idea, and so do I. That's called self-insurance, self-insured. It's almost like a pro se litigant. That's a lawyer for yourself, pro se litigant, self-insured. It's the equivalent of being financially responsible. Now, if you put your money in the bank, that's the prima facie evidence that you're unable to take care of your own money, so therefore you have to have a guardian take care of your money for you. The bank takes care of your money, guardian-ward relationship. You're legally incompetent, you hire a lawyer. You're medically incompetent, you hire a doctor. You're financially incompetent, so you hire a banker. Incompetent people need paid professionals to provide those services. My question to you is, what if you could be legally responsible, legally competent? What if you could be medically competent, medically responsible? You could save yourself a lot of money, couldn't you? Take a look at health care insurance. It costs $12,000 a year, $1,000 a month to insure a family here in America. Adequately, they say, adequate health care insurance. $1,000 a month. My God, that's $12,000 a year. At the end of 10 years, you'd have $120,000 in your can. For $120,000, you know, you could buy one bypass surgery procedure and pay cash and have $20,000 left over to take the old lady on a princess cruise down to the Caribbean. And that's just in 10 years. I got to give you a reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from a scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. Now, the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. And the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements and recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors and publications that we're endorsing and recommending will endorse or recommend the Law Hour and editorial review. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and editorial review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review either. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about popular lies, another popular lie. Insurance is one of those popular lies, and one of the most popular of the popular lies is auto insurance. Most states in this country require that you buy it by law. We're going to punish you if you don't buy our product. I've often wanted to go into the legislature and get a law passed for me. See, what I need here is the National lawyers or the National Law School Attendance Law. And what we'll do with this legislation, we'll go to Congress and we'll have them pass a law that requires everybody in America to attend law school. But to show you how free we are in America, we'll let you choose whatever law school you want to go to. And we'll apply free enterprise so that you can pay as much for your law school education as you want. You can go to Harvard at $48,000 a year, or you can go to the Gordon Law School for a few hundred bucks. Because we do it on the cheap here. Because we cater to Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife, the lowest of the low. But think about it. Think about it. Think of the freedom that you're going to have. The freedom to choose for yourself the law school that you want to attend. Tempered, of course, with the knowledge that if you fail to attend law school, that we're going to punish you with 5 years in the penitentiary and a $10,000 fine for every year that we find that you have neglected to go to law school. God, I love a law like that. Think of all the students I'd have and all the money I'd make. God, it makes me salivate just thinking about it. The National Law School Law. I always figured, you know, if the insurance industry could get a law passed that requires you to buy their service or their product, how come I can't get a law passed to sell my service and my product? And then after the National Law School Law, we could have the National Carpet Institute Law, a law that requires every American family to carpet their houses from wall to wall. But to show you how fair we are, we'll let you choose the carpet company you want to buy your carpet from. No coercion here. We believe in freedom in America. Freedom of choice. Freedom of action. Of course, if you don't buy carpet and the carpet inspector comes in and finds that you have, oh, say, a hallway or a back bedroom that's uncarpeted, he would write you up, give you a ticket, and fine you, $500 or $1,000 per room. How's that for a fair price? Fair? That sounds pretty fair to me. $500 for every uncarpeted room that we find you with. Why, we could have search warrants and we could have the carpet police. Think of all the people that it would employ. My God, we'd have thousands and thousands of carpet police, thousands and thousands of law school police marauding around the country, knocking on doors, seeking out search warrants. And look at all of the people that we could convict and lock up in prisons and jails for failing to buy carpet and attend law school, just like we can punish people for not buying insurance. My God, can you imagine how this would work if we did this all with all of the businesses? We could have the national television requirement. Everybody has to have at least one big screen color TV, a DVD TV at that. That's to comply with the new DVD law. If we catch you with an old analog TV in your house, we'd fine you, let's say $1,000. Let's be reasonable. $1,000 for every analog TV. We'd take care of all of you bootleggers out there. It's like looking for drugs. We could have a national war on analog televisions. It would fit in with the national war against drugs. We'd have the national war against analog TV. Think of it. And we do it all in the name of the health, safety, and welfare of the people. God love them. I think we need more government bureaucrats. And look at the employment. All these people could be working for the government and pulling down a paycheck, marauding around the country looking for analog TVs in your house, vacant rooms that don't have carpet on the floor, fools that don't have a law school education. I mean, we could bring utopia to America. I think I'll vote the straight Democratic ticket in the next election. I'm going to jot that down right here. Now, we're talking about insurance. Remember? Insurance. Now, insurance is not only big business, but it's also a big scam. And I pointed out that it's unscriptural, and God told us not to participate in that crap. But, of course, we got our own minds. We're smarter than God, and so we're paying out quite a bit. Listen to this. At the same time the premiums have been increasing, the insurance industry profits have been skyrocketing. By June of 1998, the New York Public Advocate Report found that auto insurance profits in New York grew dramatically between 1992 and 96, from $388 million to $1.57 billion. That was more than 200%. And similarly, the Speaker's Task Force on Auto Insurance found that in 1995 and 96, auto insurance profitability jumped considerably, surpassing the countrywide average of widening margins in underwriting profit, profit on insurance transactions, and return on net worth. The increase in underwriting profit is particularly noteworthy because it excludes investment income. In 1996, New York insurers' profits on insurance transactions were twice as high as their counterparts in the rest of the country. God love you people in New York. Your auto insurance industry in New York is twice as profitable as the entire nation as a whole. God love you. Get out there and buy more, would you? Now, there's some more neat numbers here. Consumer groups decry auto insurance rate overcharges and windfall profits for companies. In Austin, Texas, consumer groups announced today the results of a study demonstrating that auto insurance consumers in Texas were overcharged by $1.2 billion in 1997. The results of the study released today show a total windfall profit of more than $2 billion for insurance companies in Texas, resulting from drastically reduced payouts beginning in 1996. And although the Texas legislature intended that insurers pass along savings from so-called tort reform laws of 1995, insurers have kept the money, said D.J. Powers, executive director of the Center for Economic Justice. Added to the $900 million overcharges in 1996, insurance companies have seen a total windfall of more than $2 billion, money saved from drastically lower losses and not returned to consumers. Now watch this. The legislature comes in and enacts a law and says, if you don't buy this insurance, we're going to punish you. Then, in a symbiotic relationship with the insurance companies rip off the consumers for $2 billion. The legislature of Texas and the auto insurance industry are like sharks and pilot fish, and the pilot fish go into the shark's mouth and clean their teeth. That's what we call a symbiotic relationship. Isn't that just real special? God, I thought you'd love it. It's the free enterprise system in all of its blatant glory. The people of Texas get a free choice. They get to choose which auto insurance company they want to buy their insurance from so that when they're ripped off by their auto insurance company, it was all done by freedom of choice. I tell you, boys and girls, it's the American way. God bless America. God bless the auto insurance companies. God bless the legislature of Texas. God, it brings tears to your eyes, doesn't it? Ah, but there's more. I haven't finished with you yet. Now, excessive and unnecessary fraud litigation and injury claims have pushed the average insurance premium to more than $774 in 1996. I don't know what it is nationwide. Here in Missouri, it ain't too shabby. I saw a guy the other day who was paying $600 a year for auto insurance. That's out here on the countryside. See, when you're out in the country, it costs you less. I remember when I was a kid, it only cost me $40 a year for auto insurance. PL and PD, 1020. $10,000, $20,000, $40 a year. That was about 1955, 56, 57, along in there. But that's because I was out in the countryside. If you were living in the city, it cost you $80 a year. It cost you double that living in the city. Now, it costs us about $600 here. I'm out in the country. It costs about $800 nationwide. In the inner cities, it's $3,500. Yeah, listen to this. Downtown Los Angeles, what are you people paying for auto insurance? Auto insurance in the inner cities is prohibitively expensive. The average premium for a 38-year-old female with a clean driving record in central L.A. is $3,500 a year. What do you think you'd have with a married female with a dirty record? This is a 38-year-old female with a clean driving record in central Los Angeles. What if she was a dirty female with a dirty driving record? And what do you think that would cost you? Uninsured motorists are a widespread problem for many cities. Some areas in Los Angeles and San Diego are estimated to have uninsured motorist rates of over 90%. Hey, 90%. You think it's any different in New York, Los Angeles, or Detroit? Huh? Gets better, though. Uninsured motorists are a widespread problem in the major cities, and especially the inner cities, since the cost to provide insurance in urban areas is so much greater. There are often large disparities in premiums between the inner cities and the suburbs, frequently exceeding $1,000 a year. Well, I just pointed that out. See where we're at right here in Ozark County, Missouri? I know a guy over here, 600 and some change a year, he's paying for auto insurance. Now, what I do is I use the property bond system here. And I think that if you think about this for a moment, there's a property bond system in every state in the union. I'll bet you got a property bond system in downtown Seoul, Korea. Think about it. Tokyo, Japan. Buenos Aires, Argentina, Rio de Janeiro, around the world, coast to coast and border to border, where you live, think about a property bond, because you're only going to have an accident, you know, if you're a normal, everyday, garden variety, insured motorist once every 33 years, statistically, on average, here in the United States. I'll bet you it ain't much different in Tokyo, Seoul, Korea, or Buenos Aires. So if you could get off the insurance and get onto strict liability, that's where I have to pay every damn dollar's worth of damage. Now think of this. If I'm driving down the road and I cause you a damage, and I don't have insurance, but I got a property bond, and I cause you a damage of $1,835, do you know what I got to do? I got to pony up $1,835 and pay you in cash money. I got to cut you a check now. But if my insurance premium is $600 and change, $612, $18, in 3 years' time, I'd have enough to do that, and I'm only going to have a wreck on average once every 33 years. I'd have enough to pay for the wreck in 3 years, and then for the next 30 years, I'd be able to save my 600 and some change. How much money would that be today? 600. I'm going to put 600 times 30. $18,000. I could put $18,000 in my pocket instead of the insurance company's pocket. What would you think of that, Tom? Huh. Yeah, I think that makes more sense. I think that's more gooder for us guys down here at the bottom of the pond. Bottom feeders, I call them. Now, although accidents in cities are less severe than accidents out in the country, they're much more likely to result in an injury claim. For example, for every 100 accidents in Los Angeles, there are roughly 99 bodily injury claims, over twice the average for the rest of California. There was one case where there was an accident between an automobile and a bus, and the bus had 24 passengers, but they had 32 bodily injury claims. Now, you go figure that one out. 24 passengers put in 32 bodily injury claims. Looks like to me that there was 8 bystanders on the sidewalk claimed to be riding the bus when they got hurt by the automobile that hit the bus while they were standing on the corner. That leads me to believe that city people are dishonest, or at least more of them living in the city are dishonest. Now, for low-income families, here's what that means. When families in the bottom income quintile, that's Q-U-I-N-T-I-L-E, that's talking about you and me, boys and girls, those of us that are down here at the bottom, when we buy auto insurance, they spend 7 times the percentage of their household income on auto insurance as do families in the top quintile. Don't you just love that word, quintile? That means bottom of the pile. All right. Well, that makes a lot of sense. See, if you're making $100,000 a year, you're in the top 5% of income earners in the country. And if you're making $50,000 a year, you're at the average, the median average income. That means half the people of America make $50,000 or more, and half the people of America make $50,000 or less. Aha. Uh-huh. Now go out and buy your auto insurance policy for $3,500 a year. Well, if you're making $100,000 a year, that represents 3.5% of your income. And if you're making $7,000 or $50,000 a year, it represents 7%. Can you follow that? Can you do the arithmetic? I know this is higher math, but you're spending twice as much on auto insurance when you make half as much money. Now, if you're making $25,000 a year, you got to pay the same $3,500. See, the insurance companies, they don't understand this income disparity crap, see? And so they come along and say, we want everybody that drives an automobile to pay $3,500 a year if you're running your car around downtown Los Angeles. And they don't care if you're making $100,000 a year or $25,000 a year. But if you're only making $25,000 a year, my God, it costs you 14%. $3,500, 14% of your income. Well, if you're only making $12,500, you know, you'd be paying 28%. Know what I mean? So us poorer people over here are actually getting penalized more on our auto insurance, aren't we? So I thought I'd throw that one into the mix over here. So you take a guy that's only making 25 grand a year. Now, he hasn't got as good a street corner, you know, as some other guys. And so he's only making 25,000 a year compared to the guy's making 50,000. He's actually paying twice as much for his auto insurance as a percentage of his income, 25 to 50. Now, the regressivity of the current system is heightened by the fact that the typical low-income household spends more on auto insurance in 2 years than the value of their car. Well, that's another factor to be thinking about because, you know, us little guys down here at the bottom, we ain't driving the cars that they are at the top. For instance, a guy making $100,000 a year, he's probably a lawyer, a doctor, or a real estate broker, and he's probably driving a BMW or a Lexus. And the guy that's making $50,000 a year, you know, he's probably driving a Chevrolet, and us little guys down here at the bottom are driving Datsuns. And so when you're driving one of these old Datsuns, I used to have an old Datsun pickup, you know, and it got beat up in a hailstorm, and I think I paid $700 for it. Now think about this. My God, if I was paying auto insurance at $600 and some change a year for a $700 pickup, I'm paying damn near as much as the whole damn thing is worth every year just for the crummy insurance. That's what they're pointing out here. See, they're telling us that very same story, that when you're a little poor guy like us guys down here at the bottom of the pond, that in 2 years' time, it can exceed the value of their car. Now, when you're driving this, you know, $50,000, $60,000 BMW, and you're paying $3,500 for insurance, you know, it's 7% of the value of the car. But, hey, troops, when you get to be driving this old clunker down here at the bottom, you know, this beater, all of a sudden this insurance is costing you way more. Now, people are able to figure that out, you know. They got a $500 car and a $3,500 insurance bill. And right away, the guy says to himself, hey, I got to do something about this. And so he ends up driving around on the streets, marauding around, threatening all the rest of us without any insurance. Huh? Can we have that in America? Now, this health insurance is another story over here. Health insurance costs $1,000 a month. $1,000 a month to adequately insure your family. You got to be spending $1,000 a month, $12,000 a year. So that's why, you know, it's just stark terror. But I quit eating pig, fat, salt, white flour. Oh, I sneak in a York peppermint patty every once in a while just to make sure my health doesn't deteriorate. But I wanted to just point out to you here that $12,000 a year to almost make a man go straight, you know that? I mean, we're getting to the point over here where we're going to have to start eating right and clean up our act, or we're going to go bankrupt trying to pay the insurance company to give us the bypass surgery that we're going to need for all the fat that we're eating. I quit eating at McDonald's. You know those McDonald's burgers are 30% fat? Wendy's is hot and juicy. God only knows how much fat they got in theirs. And then there's Burger King. I always like Burger King a little better because they're boiling the fat out on their grill and it goes down into the fire and burns up down there. So that might have some merit to it. Burger King might have a better program. They might have a better mousetrap. But irrespective of that, all these hamburger joints are buying 30% fat hamburger. And that's special. That's the legislature that gives us this 30% fat hamburger. And then God comes along in Leviticus 3:17 and says, you shall eat no manner of fat. I'm beginning to wonder if God's a cardiologist. I think that guy maybe is trying to prevent heart attack over here and strokes and stuff by telling us not to eat fat. I read that in Reader's Digest, I thought, somewhere. Now, I got another can over here. It's a coffee can, one of them, you know, 39-ounce coffee can thingamajobbers over here. And I put $12,000 in my can. Put 12 ounces of gold in there, religiously. My God, do you know that in 10 years I'll have 120 ounces of gold in my can? And I'll show you how this works. My boy Dirk over here had to have bypass surgery. Went into the doctor, and you know what he said? He won $30,000. I told the boy, hey, you ought to go to India and have this done. You can get it done for $8,000 over in India. And so when the boy told the doctor that he could go to India and get the job done for $8,000, instead of paying him $30,000 here, you know what the doc did? He said, I'll do it for $7,500. Save you the trip. Save you $500. So we went over to the coffee can, pulled out 8 ounces of gold, took it into Charlie, cashed it in, paid the doctor cash under the table. I'm sure the doctor wrote that down on his 3x5 card so he could pay his income tax. I hope. I pray. I'd feel awful bad if the doc getting paid in gold coin, you know, didn't pay his income tax. But I just thought I'd point that out. Then we got to pocket the difference. I've found that by paying cash, you save more money than buying on time. And buying insurance is like buying on time. And always remember that the legislature made it all possible. It was your legislature that enacted these laws. You should write to your senator or representative today and tell them that we need carpet legislation to compel all the people of the state to buy carpet, and we need carpet police, and be sure that you put in the law school law so that we can have law school police to benefit George Gordon in the law school business and the carpet industry to go along with the auto insurance industry. Don't you think? Let me remind you that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, then please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.